Okay. This week's Sedra, Parshas Bamidbar. The Midrash starts off, V'daber Hashem al Moshe b'midbar Sinai. And Hashem spoke to Moshe in the desert of Sinai. So the Midrash asks, Lama b'midbar Sinai? Why dafka in the desert of Sinai? Nikan shanu chachamim, b'gimol dvarim nitna Torah. The Torah was given in three ways. Be'esh, with fire, b'mayim, with water, and u'b'midbar. And it was given in the desert. B'lama nitna b'gimol dvarim alalu, and why dafka these three things? Ela ma'elu chinam l'chol ba'olam, just like these three things are basically free. They're hefker, anybody can take it. If you want to go to the Sahara Desert, take some sand, it's free. Water, pretty much free, depends where you go. And fire, light a match. Fire, water, midbar, free to anybody. So, kach divrei Torah, chinam hein. So too, the divrei Torah is free. Free for anybody. Davar achar, says the Midrash, another pshat. Komi she'eno oseh atzmo k'midbar hefker. Whoever does not make himself like a desert that is hefker, eino yachol lishnut as a chokhma b'torah. Such a person that doesn't make himself hefker cannot acquire chokhma in Torah. L'kach ne'mar b'midbar Sinai. That's why it says b'midbar Sinai. So the Sfas Emes asks a very simple question over here. He says that he's bothered by the fact that these two ideas in the Medrash seem to be contradictory. How so? We said the first shot was the desert. Why? Because it's free. No problem. Take it. It's free. And then the second shot says, what's the idea of the Midbar? That if you don't suffer like you're in the Midbar, like you're alone in the Midbar and like make yourself hefker, then you're not going to be able to kona Torah. So what is it? Is the Torah free or not? I'll give you a mashal to maybe understand the question a little better. Like if I go up to someone and I say, guess what? I have a great offer to you, for you. He says, yeah, what is it? Then I'm going to give you a free entrance. Free entrance. Says, free entrance? Wow, I love free entrances. Well, where? Free entrance to where? Where? To the local state prison. Free entrance, no problem. You can go there and in, they'll let you in and stay for the next 10 years. Free. Now, would you call that free? A free entrance. Yeah, free entrance. But it has a life of slavery. That's free. Same idea. When, yeah, it's always free. And what do you get with it? You have 613 mitzvahs, and you have all the, you know, the negative commandments, the positive commandments, and unless you make yourself hefker like the Midrash, totally give up everything in life and muck yourself in the Torah, you won't be able to make a kinyan on the Torah. That's free. What kind of freedom is that? Free. Go ahead and take it. Free admission to the state prison. That's what the Sasemis asked. And similarly, we see, in fact, that in other nations, we know another Midrash tells us, that when God offered the Torah to the other nations, they said, no, thank you. Why? Because they saw, you know, the Torah is free, as we said. Anybody can take it. They said, no, thank you. Just like that, we can do without. You know, 613 mitzvahs, and they all said, no. Only the Jews said, not the Nishma. So the Sfas Emes himself gives one answer. I'd like to share with you an answer I was thinking of myself. So first, let's mention this quickly, the Sfas Emes. He's medayik in one word in the Midrash. He says that's the answer. He says, we mentioned the second shot, says whoever doesn't make himself hefker, like the Midbar, he says, Einu yachol liknos es chochma v'torah. He's medayik in the word liknos, make a kinyan, acquire. In other words, yeah, Torah is free. Anybody can take it. You can have it. Fine. Anybody can do it. Do the mitzvah. Not a problem. It's free. It's easy. However, if you really want to make a kinyan in the Torah, liknos es the chachma in the Torah, that's a different story. That, you have to make yourself hefker. Just to normally live a life of Torah, that's okay. It's not so hard. That's chinam. But you want to really make the Torah part of you, and be a part of your blood, get it right into you, then that is not so simple. That, you have to make yourself hefker. That's what this I want to take a totally different line to answer this Midrash. Many people look at the Torah as the Torah mitzvahs, we said before, the way we described it before, as a big yoke. Right? That, it's so difficult. right? All these mitzvahs to do, all these things to stay away from, right? And they look at it, they think, what kind of a life is that? Takes away all your simchas chayim, and they say your joy in life. And he said, how can you enjoy life? How can you be sameach with every, from the moment you wake up, do this, don't do that, do this. I want to enjoy life. They say you live only once. I want to enjoy. Well, what kind of a life is this? Of Torah mitzvahs. And of course, the non-religious people, they are, they're very, you hear this a lot. They don't want to, why don't you become from? Oh, from, I never become from. Can't do this, can't do that. That's how they look at a life of Yiddishkeit, of religious Yiddishkeit. So, but the truth of the matter is, it's not true at all. Okay, that a life of Torah and mitzvahs, with all its limitations, is not, it's not an all. In last episode, we're going to see that is really what life is all about. I'll give a mashal I heard once that really hits the nail on the head. I'm sure you're familiar with the sport of basketball. I know you guys usually don't play sports and stuff. You're in the base measures all the time, but there's a sport called basketball. Okay, so imagine the following scenario. The guy gets up, puts on his shorts, t-shirt, goes out to the basketball court. They're playing a little bit, game or so. Gets to the point where he's fed up. He says, I'm fed up with this. Dribbling, shooting, this. I miss the rim half the time. I can't stand it. And the rules. And offside. And you're here. Can't stand here. Stand over there. It's driving me crazy. He says, I. So what does he do? He goes to the side. He picks up a ladder. He goes to the rim. He puts the ladder up to the rim. Grabs the ball. Holds it, runs with the ball to the ladder, climbs up the ladder, puts it in the rim. Ah, that's a machaya. That's a sport. What is this business? Now, what would you say about that? Now, definitely easier. Definitely much easier to play basketball that way. Right? Run with the ball, go up the ladder, and put it in. Okay? But is that fun? Is that enjoyable? Not at all. Why not? Should be, right? You don't have to, all these rules and shooting and this and that. But the answer is obvious. That it's the rules, it's the limitations, it's the, whatever you want to call it, that's what makes it enjoyable. Right? If everything became too easy, that's not fun. That's not fun. Is go in and put it, as we mentioned today and this afternoon, we were speaking about reward and punishment and how a person has to have free choice. We also gave an example that, from a Sternbuch's book, that it's like students come into class and the teacher hands out papers and the kids look at it, what is it? A bunch of answers. And then the teacher says, okay, now I'm going to hand out the test. Hands out the test. So they have the answers on one sheet, the test on the other sheet. What kind of a test is that? Is that a challenge? The kid says, yes, I got 100! Big deal. Big deal. You got 100. And the answers are, you need to copy down the answers. Is the kid going to be excited? No, why? But it's much more, isn't it? It's easier. It's not a problem. Of course it's easier. But easy doesn't make it more enjoyable. Okay? Remember, Sarajevo, when I was a little kid, I used to, like all kids, like to play games and stuff like that. So I used to like pinball machines. Okay, I was fascinated by pinball machines. I don't know how old I was, maybe 10, 11 years old. And once I went to this arcade or whatever, they have pinballs. I don't know if they have pinballs anymore. They have everything. It's computerized. We didn't have computers then. So we had pinballs, right? There's these little flickers on the side. You press and then the ball goes up and you hit ding, ding, ding and hits things and you get points. If you get enough points, you can win a free game. So I remember, I used to love it. I used to hang out in this one machine and play it, whatever. But of course, every game is like 25 cents or whatever it was in those days, right? And okay. So I remember one day I came out excited, started another game, put in my money, played the game. What happened? The machine was broken. And what was broken about it? That you didn't have to put in money, right? After the game, you press the button, it starts again, right? So I was the happiest kid in the world, right? This is great. I don't put in any more money, press the button, play another game, as much as I want. But I very quickly realized it wasn't fun anymore. Right, another game, right, it's like all the time came out. The whole excitement is, 25 cents, this is it. I only came here with 50 cents, and I got to make it work, and I hope I win this game, and maybe win a free game. And that's what makes it fun. If I can, another game, and the whole time, it loses the whole enjoyment is gone. Okay? So, we see from here that, again, these, the whole idea of limitations and restrictions, it's not something which is makes things is a negative thing, takes away simcha. That's what gives simcha. When things are difficult, it makes it more enjoyable. So there's two ideas that why. One thing, it gives a person a sense of satisfaction. Right? A person works hard. He'll go back to his sports, right? You have a game, and you know you don't have the ladder up to the rim, right? And you have to play according to the rules. And it's hard, and you have to throw the ball thing, and you play the game according to the rules. But then when you win, and you did sink that basket, whatever, it makes you feel good. Why? You accomplished something. So when things are difficult, and you succeed, it gives you a tremendous boost, and it gives you a sense of self-accomplishment. That also does. Just walking up, like we said, the test answers are there. You walk up with the ladder. There's no sense of accomplishment there. You don't feel good about yourself. Big deal. But when it stops to hard, that makes you feel good about yourself. It's a beautiful story. It's been brought down to Chayaviyu. There was once, this goes back to 1914, Leminyanam. There was once a bacher there. His name was Rev Yitzchak Krakowski from Ir Lodz. Even though my father's from Lodz, and the name sounds familiar, similar, I don't know if related. But this bacher was in the yeshiva. He was 16 years old, and the yeshiva was in a place called Makov. And his guy was the top of the yeshiva. He knew all of Shas and everything at 16. Exactly. Rosh Hashiva, he says, there's nothing I can teach him anymore. Rosh Hashiva said. Anyways, besides being an unbelievable lamdan, this Rav Yitzchak, he was very tall and good looking. Very, very good looking young man. Anyways, the story goes that World War I broke out, and many parents came to the yeshiva to take their sons out, take them home, because they're worried, about their lives, bombs, this and that, so they took their kids out of yeshiva. So this Rav Yitzchak, his father came to visit and to take his son out of the yeshiva. So he walks in, and the Bachrim take one look at his father, and they almost fainted. They couldn't believe what they saw. Why? Here you have Rav Yitzchak, the 16-year-old. He's tall, built, handsome fellow, right? His father walks in, a midget, a tiny little midget, with a real ugly black-looking face. And they were shocked. They said, they couldn't make this. This is your biological father? They couldn't believe it. This short, scrawny, black-faced, ugly person is the father of this nice, tall, handsome young man? They just couldn't believe it. They said, what? So they Rav Yitzchak saw their wonderment. So he took him aside and he says, let me tell you what, there's a story behind this. So, okay, great, we love stories. So Yitzchak told him the following. He says, this story actually begins more than 10 generations ago, long time ago. Why? He says, there was a Rav that you're probably familiar with, there was in Yeshiva, the Lavush. You heard of the Lavush? It's brought down the Shulchan Aruch a lot. Or Mordechai Yaffa. So Mordechai Yaffa, he was a young man, and he became, a Gadol B'Yisrael, and he's known as Lavush. Why? Because he wrote 10 Sfarim, and each one of his Sfarim has the name Lavush in it. Lavush Cheles, Lavush Mordechai, Lavush Malchus. Each one of his 10 Sfarim have the word Lavush. Where did that come from? Why Lavush? Lavush means garment, clothing. So the story goes that this Mordechai, he was a young man, and he was very, very good looking. They say that maybe even that's where the name came from. Mordechai Yaffa. Yaffa means Yafet, means nice. So it could be even that's where it came from. Maybe the mishpacha was very, very good looking. He was extraordinarily good looking. And one day he was walking somewhere, and this beautiful woman tried to make a pass at him or whatever, and wouldn't let him go. She saw how beautiful he was, and she wanted to, start up with him. And he didn't know what to do, how to get away. It was a very, very big Nisayan. So what he decided to do was he saw on the side of the road was the cesspool, where the sewer, okay? Sewer was, he happened to see it was open. He jumped right in the sewer, okay, with all the you-know-whats in the sewer, right? From head to toe, he was in it. And so then, he kind of made his way out. This woman didn't want anything to do with him anymore. And she left him, and That was that. So he was so happy that he passed this test, and that he decided to make it his mission in life to, you know, the Osik in Torah. And at that point, he was wearing 10 different pieces of clothing. So to remember that Maisa and how he was saved from that Nisayan, he wrote the 10 Svarim, and every Sefer he called Levush something. Connected the 10 Svarim, connected the 10 pieces of clothing he was wearing at the time. That's the 10 Levushim. So he also at the time, when he was so excited about, you know, happy and thankful to Hashem that he passed the Nisayan, at the same time, he looked up to Shemayim and he offered a prayer. He says, Hashem, I ask of you for the next 10 generations, please let my children, children for next generations be really ugly. Because I don't want them to have to go through what I have to go through, pass any sign like that. This way, if they're ugly, I don't have to worry about it. So sure enough, for 10 generations, they were ugly people. And Rabbi Yitzchak said, the 10th generation was my father. That was the last. And now again, that's why I'm good looking. I'm already the 11th generation. It ended with my father. I mean, that's the story of Levusha. Brought to show the idea, again, that when a person passes in the Nisayan, you know, and again, from person, oh, get away from this, jumps in the cesspool, and says, oh, what kind of a life is that? What do you do, you know? But it gave him chiyas, it gave him the power to write 10 Svarim, and it was, it built him, right? So he said, Nisayanas, tests, and restrictions, that's not something negative. Another idea is that when things are tough and you overcome them, it increases the hana. It doesn't make it less. It increases. You know, I like to give the following analogy. Right? Somebody just finished a fleishik meal. Just finished your, you know, a meat meal. And just as you take the last spoonful, all of a sudden somebody comes in the door and says, guess what? I bought you your favorite, you know, ice cream sundae. Here you go. And I put it on the table. And you think, oh, no, I don't believe it. I just finished my fleishik meal. Just finished it. And before I can eat this ice cream, I have to wait 6 hours. Right? He says, I can't take it. So what? But okay, you know, you have to wait 6 hours. What does he do? He puts it in the freezer. And he's looking at his watch. 5 hours, 4 hours, 3 hours. Oh, how much time do I have? 1 hour to go. And he's like, he's plussing already. And then it's getting closer. A few minutes, you know, left till the 6 hours are up. He takes it out of the freezer, he sits down, he puts his little bib on, gets his fork and spoon and whatever next to him already, puts it down, watching his clock, you know, 10, 9, 8, 3 seconds to go, do what? Ah! Ding, ding to his ice cream sundae, okay? That's scenario number one. Scenario number two, yeah, let's take a goy, okay? He finishes his meat meal, no nafka meat, his meat meal, so he goes, I bought you your favorite ice cream sundae, here you go. And he starts digging in, you know, it's a goy, starts eating his ice cream. Now, which person do you think is going to have enjoy that ice cream sundae more? Obviously the yid. Why? Yeah. Since the dafka, because he couldn't eat, and he had to wait, and he enjoyed it after the ice cream sundae more. So I mean, even the gashmias, and forget about all the ruchnias experience, that even the physical world is much more enjoyable with the restrictions. Because when things are, as we said, come easy or whatever, that's not enjoyable. You enjoy it more if you have to wait. So we see it with ourselves. So with this, I want to answer the Midrash, and then a couple of minutes I want to add one other Nakuda, but I was going to first answer the Midrash. So with this, we can say very simply, we have to steer a Sosemis ask, first the Torah is free, yeah, free for anybody, take it or whatever. But then we said, what kind of freedom is that? You know, this restriction, that restriction, the answer is not a steer, that's freedom. Right? Freedom is following the Torah. That's called enjoying life, as we said. You can really enjoy life with it. When things go easy and there's no, you do what you want, when you want, how you want, that's not fun. That's what enjoyment is, and that's what builds you is when there's a challenge, when things are challenging. Not when you can walk up the ladder and put the ball in the hoop. It's when you have to, you have the rules and the regulations, and you hold by them, give you a sense of self-satisfaction, we says, you enjoy it more. That's freedom, that's real, that's what life's all about. I'd like to conclude with one last little thing, which really is a phenomenal foundation, important to know. The Rav Dessler brings it down in one of his Sfarim, and based on the Gemara in the end of Nadar, last Gemara in Nadar. The Gemara describes the following situation. A husband comes home from work, and comes into his house, goes into his room, His wife is there. He says, oh, hello, dear. Oh, did you have a nice day? Yeah, fine. Exchange the words. And he says, boy, you know, I'm so hungry. I can't wait for dinner. He sees on the table an apple. He says, oh, great. Goes up to the apple, picks it up. He's about to take a bite. All of a sudden, the strange man jumps out of his closet and says, don't touch that apple. That apple's poison. He's like, what? He says, yes, I saw that a snake came and bit out of that apple and put his venom in it. If you eat that apple, you're going to die. So the husband's like, whoa, thank you for saving my life. But who are you, anyways, hiding in my closet, you know? So the Gemara discusses that who is this guy? He was questionable whether he was an adulterer, okay, with this guy's wife. Questioning whether he was an adulterer. So Rava comes along the Gemara and says he's not an adulterer. He did not live with this guy's wife. Why? Obvious. Because if he was wanted this guy's wife, he wouldn't have jumped out of the closet and said, don't eat the apple, right? He would have said, oh, great, let him eat the apple, he'll die, and I'll be able to take his wife, you know, better, right? So obviously, the fact he saved the husband's wife, that the wife's, this guy's the husband, and he's obviously not an adulterer. Okay, that's what Rava says. So the Gemara goes on and says, wait a second, Pshita, right? Right, it's obvious. So what's the big kiddush now? Of course he saved the guy's life. He's not the adulterer. He wouldn't save the life. So what's the kiddush? So the Gemara says, no, there is a kiddush. I might have thought that mayim gnuvim imtak. That is, it says in the pasuk, that stolen waters are sweet. I might think that that applies over here. Kamash malan not. Meaning that I might think that maybe he really did commit adultery. He is an adulterer with his wife. Okay, so why did he save the husband? Because stolen waters, that's what you meaning. Before, we were talking about here, right? When things are easy and they go easy, that's not fun, right? So if the husband's dead, so big deal, he marries the wife. That's not, the whole fun of it is, wow, you know, I'm going to find out when the husband's not home and sneak in and go, and that's what gives the hana, right? The difficulty, if everything is so easy, that's not, no challenge, right? The challenge is what makes it enjoyable, like we spoke about, okay? So you might say that in the halfway, maybe he really is an adulterer, and the reason why he saved the husband is so he can continue and have a challenge. If the husband's dead, big deal, he can marry the wife. There's no fun in that. Okay? So that's what the Gemara says, I might have thought. Kamash Malan, no, that's not the case. He isn't an adulterer, because if he really was an adulterer, he would have just let the guy eat the apple and die. End of Gemara. So Tosfos asked a very simple and poignant question over here. He says, wait a second. L'chora, the Havamina is right. Right. Why don't we say that? Right? It's such a beautiful Havamina. The Mawad Tema, what I might have thought, it's so strong. Why don't we say that? Maybe he really is the adulterer, and he's saving the husband so he can make it challenging for himself and enjoy it better. Why don't we say that? The Mashmal Angor says we don't say that, but why not? So Tosis has a tremendous, tremendous useful. And this ties up everything here. And that is, he says, 100% it's true. As we said today, the whole thing tonight, that it's the difficulty, the challenge, that's what makes it exciting. 100% true. But what's this Tosis? A person doesn't realize it. Right? A person doesn't realize. People think, if only I had it easy, I'll be happy. No challenges. That's what we said. That's what the non-religious looks like. Don't give me the mitzvah. I want to eat, do whatever I want. Then I'll be happy. We saw tonight it's totally not the case. It's the opposite. What gives you enjoyment is the challenges, right? But human nature is, people don't realize that. People think, just give it to me easy and I'll be happy. But it's not true. Okay? And therefore, the man in the closet, right, he responded, it's true. He should say to the husband to make it more challenging. But he doesn't realize that that's where his enjoyment is coming from. He thinks if you ask him, he'll say, oh, that'd be great, let him die and I'll be able to marry the wife. Wonderful, easy, have her without... The person doesn't realize that that's not true. You think that will give you enjoyment. What's giving you enjoyment is dafka because it's hard. It's dafka because you have the challenge and it's difficult for you and you have to hide, etc. That's what's giving you the enjoyment. Not if you had it easy, there wouldn't be any enjoyment. That's a tremendous yesod. And it could be that that's why the goyim didn't want the Torah. Right? Again, because that's human nature. What? This restriction, that restriction, that's no fun. Of course, that is fun. That's what makes it fun. But a person doesn't realize that. That's why the Goyim said, no, we don't want the Torah. Keep the Torah. Right? Only Klal Yisrael realized that whatever it is, the more the challenges, the more enjoyment there is. We said, for all the reasons. So that's the big yesod that, okay, it's the non-religious person has to realize, but it's a big yesod to, we have to ourselves be, to realize and keep in mind, right, that whenever things are going a little bit tough and rough, and we think we have to be, say, Ashreinu ma tov chokeinu ma noim goralenu, ma noim goralenu, our goral, our is naim, is very nice. And then happy are we as like this, because even though most people don't realize it, but at least we should realize it, that all the restrictions, whatever, the Torah Hashem knows exactly what he's doing. He's not trying to punish us. He's trying to make us enjoy life even more. And enjoy life in this world, and then if we do the mitzvahs, we'll not only will enjoy life in this world, but Mitzvah Hashem will have eternal happiness in Olam Haba, which will be sparked by the coming Mitzvah Hashem of Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Mehirah Bimei.